All right, guys, welcome to the studio today. We have Craig Ballantyne, Wall Street Journal bestseller. Welcome to the studio, Craig.
Hey, this is going to be a lot of fun, Mike.
All right, yeah. Hey, I was catching up on your latest book, The Dark Side of Discipline.
It's going to be a good one.
Yeah, I'm digging it. It's the final countdown. Your book will be one that I read over and over because I was so
into it. Oh, man, that means a lot.
Yeah. No, I really liked it. It really resonated with me. And I have my shirt on today, Discipline. There's a lot of ups and downs in your book. I found it so relatable. And, you know, just to give the audience a little bit of context, we actually met a few years back now via Bedros Koulian at a BK Live event. And you're pretty tight with B. And he speaks so highly of you. Any event.
Yeah, he's like a big brother to me, man.
Yeah. Any event that that I ever go to and he gets rolling, he gets talking, he always brings you up. He always refers you and he always has great things to say about you. So I know that you guys hold each other pretty highly in regard.
Yeah. And he's mentioned a couple times in my book and I mentioned in, you know, the Man Up book and that sort of stuff. We, you know, we spent a lot of time together because we started a little coaching business in 2009. You know, so for basically a decade, we spent probably a couple weeks together a year and went out to dinner a lot and had a lot of conversations. And I watched his kids grow up and you know, I've been to his house a lot of times and he downloaded a lot of traits to me that improved my life, confidence and, you know, higher energy and leadership. And I downloaded a bunch on discipline and structure and routine to him. And now he's just, you know, he's a force of nature.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty cool. I know, did you used to be a personal trainer also, right?
Yeah. So that was my first, I guess we would say that was my first career. So I went to school in Canada. You know, I grew up just north of you in Ontario, and I wanted to be, my original goal was to be a strength and conditioning coach in the National Hockey League. And I sent out a letter to every team when I was finishing up school and never worked out, but I became a personal trainer in downtown Toronto. And I've trained Canada's richest people at the gym that I worked at. And, you know, they're really great people, but they're just people too. And so, you know, they do all types of silly things and stuff like that. But that was personal training was the first thing. Then I moved to online because I'm not really the type of person who gets energized around people all day. I kind of was pretty exhausted by the end of those training days. I get energized by being behind the computer and writing and creating. And so I moved my workout programs online and was one of the first people to do that. Next 15 years of my life, basically. But then people started asking me, I was just telling my wife right now, because I've been doing podcasts all day long to promote the book. And we were talking about how, you know, you start doing something and then it leads to something else. And so I was doing all this fitness stuff and people were saying, how do you get all this stuff done? You know, you're pumping out so much stuff. And then that's when I started helping people with the productivity and the discipline and structure and routines and all that sort of stuff. And it really took off around 2015. So for the last 10 years, I've been almost all in on this.
You have three little ones now, right?
Three under three.
Yes.
Yeah. So the first one will be 3 years old. Very soon. So we'll soon be out of the three under three. But at one point we were three under 2.5.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy. And I love the story of how you met Michelle. And, you know, I like the parts.
I'm happy to tell it if you want me to share it.
Yeah. Share that story. Please do.
So in 2019, I was old and single and I didn't want to be old and single. So I had these 90-day plans that I take people through to build their business or change an aspect of their personal lives. And I decided I'd create one for myself about meeting Michelle. And the way that we have the system set up is you choose an outcome goal, like a numbers-based goal. Like I want to own, you know, 10 rental properties or I want to lose 20 pounds. And then the thing is you don't fully control that outcome goal, but what you fully control are the action steps that get you closer to the outcome goal. So my actions, my outcome goal was I want to have 12 dates in the next 90 days. Doesn't matter if it was one date with 12 girls or 12 dates with one girl. All it had to be is 12 dates in the next 90 days. Now I didn't control that, but what I did control were the three action steps underneath it. And the first one was reach out to three of my friends, these three girls that I knew who knew a lot of other women. And, you know, they led a business community. The one was a party planner and the other one was just super social. So I reached out to them, and this one girl sent me 5 Instagram profiles, and I went through them. And I went, nope, 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 nope. And I was like, oh man. And I was like, I know what I'll do. I'll go through all the women that she follows and then ask for an introduction to the one I like. So I chose my wife from a circle like this big. I said, oh, stop. Like I scrolled 30 people down and I was like, this one, I want to meet this person. And I was living in Toronto at the time. And my friend said, well, I thought you only wanted girls in Toronto. She lives in Vancouver now. And I said, I don't care. And so we hit it off really quickly. Now, and so like 35 days after I made that 90-day plan, I met Michelle out here in Vancouver. And we got friendly pretty quick. And then by March of 2020, I'd moved out here. So it was pretty quick. But, you know, we did a lot of work on ourselves before. And we really knew what we wanted before we even met in a partner and that sort of stuff. And so it made the conversations, you know, it was very accelerated because we were able to have these difficult conversations and all types of things that really helped to solidify the relationship.
Yeah. Well, March 2020, then you guys were on lockdown together.
It's funny. We were flying out here. So in February of 2020, we were at my mom's house in this place called Stratford, Ontario, which is where I grew up, which is close to London, Ontario. And there was a crazy snowstorm, like the one that, I don't know, did you guys get the snowstorm that my mom just got?
Oh, we got a huge storm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like same snowstorm. And I was like, I'm not even sure if we're going to be able to fly back to Vancouver. But then I'm also flying back to Vancouver, and my friend was really tapped into the news, and he told me about COVID in January. So I was already telling my coaching clients like, hey, something weird has come in. You know, you need to be prepared to like shut your business down and all types of stuff. I was telling people that like probably maybe 3 or 4 weeks before that actually happened in the middle of March. And so I was going out there and going like, I'm moving from Toronto to Vancouver, and Vancouver has a very large Asian population. I'm like, what am I doing if COVID's really bad and it's coming from China and, you know, it's going to be really bad in Vancouver. I hope I don't sound racist or anything, but you know, but it was like a legitimate fear. And so I got out there, and it's like, Vancouver was probably one of the best places in North America to be in 2020, because they did this like little lockdown in May of 2020. But then after that, the weather was amazing for that summer. There was hardly any rain and it was sunny out all the time. And they opened up restaurants, and yeah, they, you know, they had like some, those weird plexiglass things up, but it was actually a great summer, unlike it was for most people. So yeah, that was how that went.
That's awesome. Yeah. Mine 2020 was much different. I was actually pitching for Shark Tank. For an app that I developed. I got tapped to pitch. They came to Detroit, and I was going back and forth. I really didn't want to go through that process. I had so much going on with my first business, all these things happening. I had a whole life trajectory change, and a woman drove her truck through my house. So,
oh my gosh.
Yeah, a drunk driver. She drove her truck through my house, and I was remodeling this house. I bought this house, and when I had started up my business, I had split from my ex of 15 years, split from my employer of 20 years. And then, you know, I had moved out of my house and I was sleeping on my friend's couch. And then I went from my friend's couch to my first office on an air mattress. It was one of those startups.
Sure.
And this was back in 2016, you know, when I went through all that. And then as I bought the house, you know, I had the office space first, and then I found this great house. And then I lived in it for 6 months before I started putting my plan together in the house. And, you know, I had some painters in there painting, and they were I would have to move my clothes around from place to place. And I had just moved all my clothes down to where she drove her truck through the house. She was a drunk driver. It was a whole fiasco. And so I had like, and then boom,
that's the definition
was like,
of fiasco.
This was like, that transitioned into, that was like February 25th. And then the COVID lockdown, like then the lockdown happened, and the auditions got funny with Shark Tank and all that stuff, because, you know, 2 year to your point with the 90-day challenges, I've been doing those for about 10 years myself. So this is why I really took to your book and like why I think we click is because I'm pretty conditioned to those types of challenges myself. And I had stopped watching TV. I had given up TV. So I wasn't in tune with the news or social media at that time. So I wasn't getting any of the updates on COVID. You know what I mean? So when I was going down to Detroit for the Shark Tank pitch, like, yeah. I'm watching everyone. They're, like, getting funny. Everyone's got the hand sanitizer, and everyone's, like, you know, the producer was being weird. She kept having to get up and wash her hands and stuff, and I couldn't finish my pitch, and I was like, what the fuck is going on? And then everything just shut down, and we had to do, like, they were like, oh, we're going to switch to, you know, Zoom auditions and things like this, and I was just like, I ain't got time for this anymore. The woman drove her truck to my house. I was like, I'm good. I got... too much else.
You know, Bedros went through a 2020 that was pretty tough. But when you go through that stuff, you have the option to come out super strong, which it sounds like you did.
Yeah. It was funny. I mean, like, well, as stressful as it all was, I mean, like, if you get me on one, I can tell that story with comedic relief for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, I can laugh now because who does that shit happen to? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Kind of funny, but you know, I loved the portion of your book where Michelle references giving up drinking during COVID.
Yeah.
And while a lot of people took up drinking,
yes,
she was, you know, getting away from that. And had you already given up drinking prior to that, or did you do it together?
So I had a journey of binge drinker for a long time to social drinker to very occasional. And I was still in the very occasional stage, and she quit in March of 2020, and then I quit fully in November of 2021.
Awesome. You know what? You just described me. So like the same way, I used to be a party animal, binge drinker, whole nine. And then, you know, gosh, I hadn't made any kind of declaration to never have a drink again, but I can't tell you the last time I had a drink. I know it's been a minimum of a year and a half. It just isn't on my radar, right? And so I just kind of got away from it, and you know, anything that doesn't serve me. And all that stuff kind of started out with those 90-day challenges kind of that you reference in your book. And you know, I there's so much to cover in the book that I was like, I would read it in the morning, you know, in the morning hours, and I'm screenshotting because you emailed it to me.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm screenshotting points of the book, and I'm like, oh, I got to talk about this. Got to talk about this. And, you know, one of my first challenges that I did for myself, I told you I had that, all those circumstances kind of happen at once with the ex and the employer, and it was 15 years and 20 years. And I was distancing myself from everybody just to do a self audit, like a internal evaluation of myself and where I was going and what I was doing. And I know you've been there, and you know, it was that moment for me. And I started getting away from social media. I started first drinking, social media, and anything to do with news media outlets, you know, anything that would bring kind of any negativity towards me. I just kind of needed to be by myself and audit, and drinking did not serve me. And so that was like the first thing. And my point was, it wasn't for any kind of social media validation, obviously, because I wasn't on social media. It was just for myself. And I really just wanted to know what I control versus what controls me. And I just thought I would initiate these challenges for myself, like when I would talk to people, when I was talking to people throughout the course, so they would tell me, oh, I could never give up Facebook, or I could never give up my cell phone. I could never give up coffee like that. How do you do that? And I'm thinking, like, I don't know. I just do it. Like, I just pick the thing, and it's like, I just want to know, like, am I addicted to caffeine? Like, or do I control that, or does that control me? And I just kind of wanted to know. And it turned out, like, just doing those little things, nothing controlled me. You know what I mean? I had control over the outcomes of those things. Mm-hmm. You know, it was self-determination and willpower. But I mean, at times I had things would get away from me, like with binge drinking and things like that. It was, I had to, you know, really take a deep dive into that and figure out what that was. But, you know, I did.
There was, you know, there was one quote that I found after I stopped drinking, and it was, the quote is, it's easier to be 100% out than 99% out. And that really applied to me when I was doing like the one drink every once in a while, because, you know, at my age, one drink, especially if it's like a strong drink, that's like, that knocks you off your game the next day.
Totally.
And the last time I had a drink was in November of 2021. I was in Newport Beach with this guy, Jason Capital, and he was with his wife and I was with my wife, you know, before Michelle was pregnant at the time. And I had one drink at dinner, and it was a pretty rich dinner too, so that didn't help. But then I had a horrible sleep, and I think it was actually, we had the Santa Ana winds that night. And so it was like horrible outside. It was horrible inside. And I woke up the next morning and I was wearing an Aura ring. I don't wear it very often. Well, I don't wear it anymore. I've got enough information from it, but it just showed me how little sleep I got that night. And I was like, for what? One drink? This is stupid. Like, I feel like 20 years ago when I was hungover from one drink. So I'm not doing this ever again. And that's when I decided to go 100% out, because it just isn't worth wasting an entire day for 5 minutes of, you know, alcohol.
I agree. I had the same experience. I laughed when that happened, because I was like, I've never enjoyed just really, what's the point? One drink at dinner, especially if you're into fitness, it's a lot of extra, you know what I mean? Or
yeah.
I've never really been into craft beer. I've always found that like,
yeah, I don't get that stuff either.
Yeah. Right. And so, but it's like, oh, you know, you get around people and they want to do the peer pressure game cause they need you to drink cause sure. They're drinking and they want to feel better about themselves. So, but I'm like, yeah, I'm good with that. And just that one drink though, like your whole, that can like jack up your whole week, truly. Like not just the next day. It's like everything's off, because then you want to change your eating habit.
Yeah, you know? your inhibitions go down, you eat crappy food, and it really is this negative domino. It's like the snooze button. You know, you hit the snooze button in the morning and you wake up late and you're rushing around, and now your entire day is thrown off by that one decision. So if you can just avoid those simple, small, bad decisions, you can stay on track and get a whole lot more done.
Yeah. Yeah, I like the points that you referenced too in the book, where you know, there's these hardcore discipline challenges. Mine were more on the mini side. I think a lot of people, when I do talk about the challenges that I do, or people want to, you know, chat about discipline and things like that, I do appreciate people associating me and discipline in the same sentence. But I'm flexible, you know what I mean? As far as I'm not sitting in the, I'm not hardcore in the ice baths like every morning, like some guys are like super disciplined in that respect. Like you get into the machines of the dark side of discipline. And, you know, I do like to get up at 2 a.m. That's when I start my day. It's just me and my dogs and I can do that. I find like when I get up at 2 a.m, that's when I'm reading your book. Right. And so, but that's when I also practice gratitude. I'm disciplined in the ways that, serve me best, where it's more, personal motivation and, you know, practicing gratitude, reading a little bit of your book at this point, and then a little bit of journaling, and then I work out. You know, that's my favorite time to work out. And that's when all my creativity comes to me. And, you know, I find that also helps me to have a more productive work day and kind of lead into, you know, wind down earlier in the evening. So, you know, like 6:30, 7 o'clock, I'm good to go. You know, I get a full night's sleep and that serves me. I'm not running out to the bar. So.
And that's a very important phrase that you use. It serves you. And that's what discipline is meant to do. It's meant to serve you. And it's not meant to be an external thing where you're chasing someone else's definition of discipline. You're doing somebody else's list of things that they consider hard, but for what purpose, right? The only thing that you should be doing is figuring out what problems and opportunities you have in life and then putting your energy towards them, moving you in the direction that you know you want to get to. And that's it. And it doesn't make for great social media content compared to, you know, sitting in an ice bath or something, or, you know, working out twice a day, but it's That's what you should be doing. You know what you want in life. Here's what you need to do. Focus on it. That's discipline.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with that. That resonated with me in the book. And, you know, I sometimes do work out twice a day, but my workouts aren't what people would think. You know, it's not like I'm not just racking weights and doing all this heavy lifting and stuff like that. Sometimes a workout with me is just playing with martial arts bow staff or you know what I mean? Just some nunchucks or just even like I'm walking on my walking pad. You know what I mean? And just some light dumbbells. It's not always like these really aggressive workouts. You know, I like, I definitely love the sauna. Sauna serves me. It's, you know, I find it therapeutic and I love that heat and that heat therapy. And it just lets me release and kind of just reset. That's a beautiful experience. Yeah. What are some of your wellness practices? I know obviously you're known as to a lot of your coaching clients as the most disciplined man in the world.
That's a pretty cool title.
Yeah. Well, you know, for me, my workouts are a little bit less in duration these days because we have the three kids under three. And so for me, everything is designed around my family, spending time with my family. I spend a lot of time with the kids. You know, I took a long time to get them, so I want to make the most out of the time I have with them. But for me, I spend a lot more time outside these days than ever because I think, well, first of all, I live in Vancouver, and even when it's raining, it's nice outside. And so we have the mountains, we have the water, we have the forests. You know, I think that I get some of my best ideas out there. So I walk a lot. I still lift my basics. And other than that, I did a spell of jujitsu, but it's not really something for an old man to take up. So my shoulder's still kind of recovering from it. But mostly I want the kids to be active, and they'll probably, you know, the oldest one is now three. And so she can start skiing and she can start jujitsu and whatever she gets into, whether it's soccer or dance or whatever, you know, staying active with the kids is probably going to be one of my main goals going forward. And making sure that they're active and they're not stuck behind screens and stuff all day long. You know, we are making sure to build their lives so they're not. And that serves me. And so what serves me now and what served me 20 years ago are two totally different things. But you got to know. You know, and when you know what matters to you, you run your own race and you ignore everybody else.
Yeah, I like that. And I like that. You know, it's your family that disciplines you now that kind of serves your discipline. Like you referenced in the book, did I want to get up at 2:30 in the morning? You know what I mean? And feed the baby. And, you know, but you did because, you know, that was you were disciplined enough to commit to your.
Yeah, I made that commitment to them. Absolutely.
Exactly. Exactly. I like that. So it's the discipline.
That's what I signed up for.
Exactly. And you did want to get up at 2:30. And I was reading it when I was reading that it was 2:30 in the morning for me
because,
you know, I was up. And something else I loved about, you know, you reference Daisy, your dog in the book.
Yeah.
One of your greatest mentors was a rescue that you rescued. Daisy was a rescue, right?
Daisy was not. But the dog that I had before, Bally, was one of my best mentors. I had him for 12 and a half years and he was a chocolate lab and he taught me a lot. And, you know, I talk about him in the Unstoppable book.
Okay. So, why did I get that crossed over? I thought that one was, he was a rescue, right?
No, he wasn't either. But I mean, he rescued me really, you know, he did a lot for me. He, you know, he just, when you have a chocolate lab or a Labrador in general, like they're the friendliest dogs in the world. And I grew up kind of crusty and skeptical of people, but you know, they make you, if you're taking your dog anywhere, you're going to end up talking to a lot more people. And it's just the energy of, you know, when you come home to a happy dog, like oh, there's no reason not to be like this myself in real life. And so there was a lot that he taught me. And, you know, definitely improved my mood and combined with hanging around Bedros and, you know, took me from more of an introverted type of person to more extroverted and empathetic. And that's been really, really helpful in many areas of my life. So dogs are great. And right now the kids are, our middle kid, who's about almost two now, she is obsessed with the dog. And so Daisy's now six and she's not as like crazy energy. So she's just the right age for them. And it's really cute to see them interact.
That's awesome. Yeah, I just rescued a dog, actually, but I swear I thought I read that you rescued Daisy.
No, man, I've never had a rescue dog. I mean, I think it's a really honorable thing to do, but I haven't. When I grew up, all our dogs were kind of the mixed variety of,
yeah,
and ran away from home sort of thing.
Right. Yeah, no, I can appreciate your dogs being your mentors too. I had two Great Danes. One of them just passed away in August, and she was the first one I got. And it was during that, just prior to COVID, when all that stuff had happened, I was finally in a place where I could get a dog, and I needed one because I'd become so introverted, and I had become so, I'm kind of like an introverted extrovert, or an extroverted introvert.
Yeah.
If that resonates at all.
I
got that Great Dane around my birthday time, in 2019. And, she was amazing. I named her Frankie. And she just, again, like, yeah, you know, you can't come home in a bad mood when you have, you know, that smiling face at you.
Exactly.
So it was pretty cool. And I can relate to, you know, your dog being your mentor for sure. That's a beautiful experience. And yeah, I just literally picked up at the Detroit airport a rescue. So I rescued a pup from the Magic Mission. And a friend of mine is the founder of that organization. And it came from the island of Utila, Honduras. And,
wow.
Yeah, an island dog. It's the cutest pup, and so well behaved. It's easily, over the course of the weekend, I can tell you, this is like the best behaved dog I've ever had. So it's going to be a beautiful experience, I can tell.
That's good, man.
Yeah, yeah. So back to the book. So what's the pyramid? I had some notes on the pyramid.
Oh, the pyramid of peak performance.
Peak performance, yes.
Yeah, yeah, so we start off, you know, it's kind of like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and that the most important stuff is down at the bottom, and the stuff on the top is kind of like the icing on the cake. So we put motivation at the top. You know, you can watch your YouTube videos and stuff, but only after you've gotten the rest of your life together, because motivation doesn't get you very far. It's the spark that might, you know, get you going, but it burns out pretty quickly. Then under that, we have challenges, and I don't think that people need to do any of the types of challenges that they find online. You can get the results from a challenge a lot faster. But for a long time in my fitness business, I ran 12-week transformation contests, and I know that they can have a lot of value in helping people develop some habits and routines. But the relapse rate on those things is so high. You know, people would lose like 30 pounds with this, and then, you know, 6 months later, they'd want to join another challenge because they gained the 30 pounds back, and it's really frustrating. So there had to be something more to it. And then under that, we had discipline. Discipline is not effective unless you have the next level, which is systems. And so I've talked for years how I have effortless discipline. And I have effortless discipline because I use the systems of elimination, preparation, and accountability. Those three things that I, you know, for when I wanted to stop drinking, I removed myself from drinking environments. I removed alcohol from the house, and I started spending time with my drinking friends in non-drinking environments. I don't think you have to give up all your drinking friends. The toxic ones, maybe, but not all of them.
I agree.
Yeah. And so then, getting accountability, you know, when I go on a podcast and I tell everybody I don't drink, you know, you're pretty much, you know, if you want to have a drink, you're screwed because you can't, because you're not going to be a hypocrite. You know, you're not going to say one thing to lots and lots of people and then go do something different behind closed doors. That's just not the way you operate. It's not the way I operate. So motivation, challenges, discipline, systems. And then that really feeds your identity of who you are as a person, who you believe yourself to be. And then the foundation of it all is the high standards that you set for yourself. So, you know, you become, I'm the type of person who doesn't drink. I'm the type of person who doesn't swear. I'm the type of person who is polite and courteous. I'm the type of person who, when somebody gets in an elevator, I say hello. I don't look at my phone. You know, that's just the type of person I am. That's my identity. Great. So now I'm going to act in accordance with it. I'm an organized person. I'm on time. It, you know, it's because if somebody does the flip of that and says, I'm always late, well, you're always going to be late. if you tell yourself that, if that's your identity and you like are disappointed in yourself, well, stop saying you're always late.
Right.
You know, and set higher standards for yourself. So those are it's motivation, challenges, discipline, systems, identity, and standards. And my co-author of the book, this guy, Daniel Woodrum, he really fleshed out the standards part, because I had written the first 2/3 of the book and he brought that standards parts in, which I had operated on high standards, but I never really thought of it as how important it was until he made the case. And so that's the final part of the book. And we show you how to set standards for your life so that actually, do you need to be disciplined if you have high standards? It's almost automatic. And that's what we're aiming for. We're like, how can we make the right decisions automatic for people so that they change their bad behaviors into good behaviors? And in most cases, I think anybody who wants to be a high performer, wants to be successful, is already doing a lot of good things. And it doesn't, you know, their success isn't because they're not doing more good things. It's because their bad habits and negative behaviors are holding them down. It's like trying to run a marathon with a 30-pound kettlebell on your back. You know, it's going to be very, very difficult and painful. So why not get rid of the kettlebell? That's going to make a bigger impact on your race time than going and adding a really nice pair of running shoes. You know, the running shoes is not going to get rid of the 30-pound weight on your back. So that's what you have to get rid of.
Yeah, I can totally relate. And it's, you know, people come along with that too. I kept trying, like, to your point of, you can still engage with your friends that drink. I have no problem doing that as long as they don't need me to. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, absolutely. I also found business networking to be challenging. Like in my environment, like I would go network, and until I found my way to Bedros Network. You know what I mean? It's a little like there's no pressure with any of that stuff, but like locally in the business networks, I mean, everything surrounds around drinking, and it's
absolutely.
Like, I don't have any desire to go business network and get drunk. I mean, because nothing comes out of it except for a nasty hangover and then like nonsense, misunderstandings, people jumping to conclusions and making assumptions, and like, take me out of that mix.
Right. And I mean, you know, one mistake, you know, you think, oh, I just had one beer, or maybe you had two, and you get behind the wheel, and the next thing you know, you ruin your life, and it's just not worth it for a couple beers. You know, I made some mistakes when I was younger. I definitely shouldn't have been driving, and you know, by the grace of God, somehow I did not, you know, get arrested or something. I know some guys that did, and you know, we have a coaching client from Canada. He can't come to our events in America because he's for 10 years he can't go into the United States. All from like, you know, two drinks, three drinks, and then he got behind the wheel.
Yeah, that happens. It's unfortunate. I, you know, to too many people. And that's like here in the States, a DUI is a 10 grand easy. I mean, at a minimum, 10 grand, you know, you're facing 10 G's out of pocket, you know, right off the rip. I mean, if something tragic doesn't happen.
Right. Exactly.
You know, that's on light.
And so, you know, we're obviously looking at like the selfish part. Like, I don't want to go to jail, but obviously you could also completely hurt other people. And, you know, all from an act as generally innocent as, you know, having a couple beers with somebody. So you have to be very careful, very, very careful in this day and age. Like my dad, he probably had 3 drinking and driving, convictions, but that was in the '80s and like nothing really happened. And, you know, obviously they're a lot tougher on things. And I'm just grateful that he never hurt anybody, because he, you know, he got caught 3 times, but he probably did it like 1,000 times.
It's exactly. Crazy. Yeah. People
and
get
so
caught.
That's another thing that put me off drinking.
Yeah. I, you know, my brother, he was involved in a drinking and driving accident, and there was a death that resulted out of that. And he's done some prison time, and that ultimately led to him just not being able to escape, you know, that hamster wheel. You know what I mean? It's like, it was unfortunate. That was, in his early formative years. He was only just 21, you know, 21 years old.
I know, it's crazy to think that, again, something that is in most cases is probably just, you know, I'm just going to go out for some drinks or I drink, and you know, you get peer pressured into an extra, and the next thing you know, maybe too many, and you're behind the wheel, and it's a tragic end for many, many lives. And it's unfortunate. And it could be all prevented by just eliminating that from your life.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was one of the easier things for me to say goodbye to, you know. Kind of unfortunately, though, like as I was kind of putting myself through those kind of just mental challenges during that time when I was starting up my business, I just wanted to be all in on me and all in on my focus for my business, just to see, you know what I mean? I just didn't see where I didn't see value. I left it behind me. You know what I mean? And and with that also, it kind of meant leaving some people behind, because some people are cool with you kind of making those life choices for yourself, and other people don't want to see you make those choices. Like I remember taking screenshots of messages that I would get from people, because I kind of wanted to like journal those types of situations down so I could reflect later down the road, because people were saying very specific things to me, like, I don't like this new version of you, or you think you're better than me. And I was like, I don't think I'm fucking better than anybody. I was like, I'm just trying to make good choices for myself to take myself to the next level, because putting my fate in the hands of others led me to where I am right now, sleeping on someone's couch and starting a business from fucking scratch. You know, I just wanted a safe place to work. And I wanted to provide a safe place of employment for other people that wanted to work on a team with me. That's all I wanted. Yeah. And so with that came making, you know, those hard choices, cutting people out. Yeah,
absolutely. But it, at the end of the day, it all comes back to a phrase you used earlier, which is the choices served you. And by you, by those choices serving you, it allowed you to serve other people. Because there's a point where you have to get to where it's not about you anymore. It's about what you can do for other people. And we're very fortunate, you know, you and I are born in great countries, you know, Canada, United States, lots of opportunity. And it's time to, you know, you get to a point where it's like, I got to pass the elevator back down and bring people up. And that's what the decision that you made.
Yeah. I love how your coaching platform, like you've coached everybody from seven-figure CEOs to, you know, fathers and teachers and, you know, your everyday guy. What, you know, what's your ideal coaching client?
Our ideal coaching client is someone who asks a lot of questions. So it doesn't matter if somebody's already got a seven-figure business. It doesn't matter if somebody's doing a side hustle. It doesn't matter if they're a woman or a man, you know, 20 or 60. If they become a coaching client and then they don't ask us questions, it's probably not going to end well, because, you know, they're going out and making decisions without our feedback and advice. But the most successful coaching clients send a question almost every day via WhatsApp or email or something like that, because they're curious. They have to be curious about what's the better way of doing something. And they have to have their ability to set their ego aside and go, I got into coaching because, you know, things are not good enough for me. And therefore, if I keep doing the same thing over and over again, thinking I'm smarter than everybody else, nothing's going to change. So, you know, we had this one guy, Charlie Johnson. He's another coach in Dubai, and he was a coaching client of mine, and he was stuck, but he sent me like 3 questions a day for 90 days. And in 6 months, I grew his business from like $500,000 to 5x it, you know, to like $2.5 million. And he was just great to work with, because it was fun. It was challenging. And, you know, we're like anybody else. Like Bedros uses the example of dogs, right? Like if dog doesn't have a purpose, it starts to, you know, get anxious.
Dig
and
holes.
If people don't ask me questions, I'm like, come on, make me useful over here. So to me, that's what it is. And it's some, you know, generally most of our clients are family oriented and they're in, you know, quote unquote, real businesses like HVAC and construction and financial services. And we do have some online clients and stuff like that, but we really try and focus on those real world businesses that have teams that need leadership, that need the right meeting structure without going overboard and, you know, being able to deal with all types of team members and all types of people. And so that's, you know, we love a good challenge and we love figuring out problems, and the best clients are the ones that bring us the puzzles to solve.
Yeah. I love that. I love that you love helping people. You know, you have a lot of just even in your, even in the intro of your book, you have a lot of great comments from a lot of people mm-hmm. that have worked with you alongside you. And that's fantastic. You work. One of them was a Grammy Award winning Nashville.
Seth, man, he's a fantastic guy.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about Seth.
Yeah, he's really cool. He's a singer songwriter. Actually, he's more of a songwriter. So he does stuff in both country music, and he's worked with some big names in country music and also in the Christian music space. And then he also is a real estate investor, which is how he and I got connected in the first place, because, you know, some other real estate investor told him about me. And so he was coaching client for a while, and he's got a studio. I've been down to, it's in Franklin, Tennessee, and my wife and I went down there before we had kids, and we recorded songs in their studio. It was really cool. But he wanted to build a seven-figure business while only working 35 hours a week. And he was able to do that. Like, he kept meticulous track of how many hours he was working per week. And so the year that he did it, he averaged 33 hours per week because he had a couple of young kids and he really liked to spend time with his wife. And his wife was from Sweden of all places. So they would go to Sweden in the summertime, and it really cut back on his work. And that's the type of person I like working with, because, you know, they're very family oriented, and, you know, he started the business to support the family, and we want to support those people that do that. I was thinking after I answered that question of what I like in a coaching client, the things that we don't like, and I think this is just as important, is that we find it difficult to work with people who are what we call panic button pushers. So if everything is an emergency, you know, like everything is the end of the world, it's going to be very difficult for you to be a successful entrepreneur. So if a team member quits, if that's the end of the world, well, what's going to happen when two team members quit and you get a large refund and your computers break down and your truck breaks down? And it's not the end of the world when one bad thing happens. But we see that in a lot of new entrepreneurs. You know, like, oh yeah, somebody ran into my house with their car. It's the end of the world. Like, it can't be the end of the world. You got to get up and go to work. And
I love that you're hitting this topic, dude. Keep going, because I can get into this all day.
I used to joke that, you know, there's going to be days when your spouse hates you and your dog runs away and someone kicks in the nuts. And I used to joke, like, there's going to be days like that. And then I read an article about where that actually happened to a guy in a day. And I was like, yeah, see, this is going to happen. And you can't push the panic button every time you get a refund. And it becomes tiresome. It's exhausting for everybody involved, for the coach. It's exhausting for the client if they don't have the emotional regulation to be able, like, you have to be a steady Betty.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've had some horrible things happen in business, and, you know, I've had to lay off 8 people in one day, and, you know, it seems like really tough, but you also can't let the other people who are still on the team, you can't let them see you panicking and sweating. And so you have to, as the entrepreneur, you have to absorb that stuff and still show up like a Labrador with a smile on your face. And, you know, get everybody energized and pumped up, because
that's a great point too. I think that as a, you know, as the leader or anybody in a leadership position, I think it's good to share vulnerable moments, but you have got to still lead. Like, during the course of COVID, I had 100 employees at the time, and I had my four of my admin folks, my key folks that worked in my office, all quit at once. Literally, like, the one guy quit, he hit the panic button. He was my right hand man. He hit the panic button. Like, he had a wife that worked remote and could just, you know, totally take care of him. And so, like, he was like, I'm out. And then he slammed the field. He slammed the industry and, like, made it seem like to the rest of the people in the leadership teams, they were stupid to stay. So then they quit. And it was just me and my office manager. And I just kind of sat in my office one day, because, like I told you, I wasn't tuned into the news. So I wasn't watching all of the stuff and having all the fear and panic, because I still had to show up. You know what I mean? I still had a lead, and I still had all these other employees to take care of. And my business was essential. So I still had to work. We all still had to be on the front lines. So,
I look at it is, listen, you got to share the facts.
Yeah.
And this is something called the Stockdale Paradox by this guy, Admiral James Stockdale, who is, you know, prisoner of war for 7 years in the Vietnam War. And he says, you have to face the brutal facts, but you cannot lose the belief that you're going to prevail in the end. And that's it. I mean, that's stoicism 101 right there. Like, you could, yeah, your house could burn down and your bank account could be emptied, but those are the facts. All right. We can't ignore the facts. I'm not telling you to ignore the facts, but I'm telling you that you have to go, okay, those are the facts. And yeah, it's horrible. And I feel bad, but I got to show up to the next round.
Yes. You know? And I love that you brought all that up because I had all the dumb shit happen to me. Name it. It's fucking happened. Like, I mean, it truly, and I just find comedy in it all because it was like I remember pulling up to my house the day the girl drove her truck through it. I had just gotten home. It literally had just happened. And I was like, well, of course this happened, you know, because a series of four other things happened over the course of the previous week leading up to that. So I was like, well, this is naturally the next thing that would happen. And I just look at it like that. Yeah. And then here we go.
Well, I don't know if you ever heard Bedros tell this story, but I interviewed him for my podcast earlier last year and about a year ago now. And he was talking about 2020. And so, you know, COVID comes along and shuts down all the fit body boot camps, et cetera. And he's having a hard time for the next couple of months. And he said out loud, he goes, well, universe, you know, what are you going to do to me now? Or he said something like that. He literally said out loud, what more could possibly go wrong? And then he was running that project thing and a guy died during the project, right? So he had a wrongful death suit. And he's talked about this on our podcast publicly. I'm not revealing anything that's not public knowledge.
Right.
And he was like, here's the lesson. Don't ever ask the universe what else could go wrong.
Fuck.
Because it will send you something. And so, but he had no choice. He had all these people counting on him and he had to show up, and he did show up, and he didn't take outside money for Fit Body Bootcamp, which is something he's very proud of to this day. You know, obviously a lot of them shut down. He lost a lot of franchises and franchisees, but he didn't quit. And he went through all that, and he's a much stronger individual now because, you know, you can take the path of least resistance, and he could have went drinking and binge eating and all this stuff and complaining and blaming others, but he didn't. He accepted, you know, this is what he signed up for, you know, the good and the bad. And he just leaned into it. And it's remarkable. It's what you did. It's what he did. It's what we all have to do. It's what all great stories, any story you've ever watched, any movie where you're like, yeah, man, I was really rooting for that guy. Well, you love watching it. When it comes down to your turn, most people don't like doing it. But if it ever does happen to anybody listening, just understand that if you want greatness, you got to lean into it leaning into it is the hardest thing possible.
It is the hardest thing possible. And I think that's why, you know, Bedros resonated with me. You know, I made my way to BK Live. I remember I didn't even want to go. You and I didn't get a picture together, but I took a picture of you and our mutual friend together. I have Jesse.
Ooh.
His name's Jesse. Okay. Yeah. And so, but I remember that event and, I didn't want to go. Like, I had just finished, I had entered like the men's health and fitness competition. It was this international contest, and I was trying to raise money for two nonprofits, and I made it to the top 1% in that. And, I knew I wouldn't take it because I'm not four times the size of the other guys that were in that competition, but you know, I knew that I would bring awareness to the two nonprofits I wanted to raise the 20 grand for. Mm-hmm. And so, and it was also like for anybody that voted, money went to Homes for Wounded Warriors. So it was like three nonprofits really that were on my radar. And so, and then after that competition, I had some weird stuff happened like during the course of that competition, as you know, just like universe works in mysterious ways and shit happens. And that's the way it was. And, I had bought the ticket for BK Live and it was, I was pretty excited about it. And then until I wasn't excited about it and I didn't want to go. And I remember I made myself get on the plane and, I felt like shit. I felt like I looked like shit during that event, but I went and I sat in the front row at the end of the stage. And for every guy that came up and spoke on stage, like oh my God, I couldn't believe how grateful I was to be there at that event, because each fucking speaker spoke to me and I shook every guy's hand right off the stage as they walked down. I had the very end seat in the front
row.
Oh,
very cool.
It was awesome. And then, you know, I felt inspired, and I had actually signed up with another, I was looking to sign up with a coach. I needed some inspiration. I needed, you know, iron sharpens iron and all that. And I just, I needed some help, you know, in that, and with that respect. And I signed up with somebody else and then offboarded. And then I just signed up with Legacy Tribe and started working with Bedros and that crew. And I just, you know, one person leads to the next. And, you know, Bedros introduces a lot of people. He brings a lot of people together, including you. You know what I mean? So not having gone to that BK Live event, I wouldn't have met you. You know what I mean? I wouldn't have met a lot of the guys and a lot of the women that I met through those experiences and continue to meet on a regular basis. And so I think it's like getting yourself into the right rooms with the right people. I mean, like, there's nothing beats that.
No, tribe. Tribe is so powerful. You know, tribe will lift you up or tribe will pull you down. And so, you know, the tribe at your local watering hole will pull you down. But the tribe at events, even online tribes, you know, that's the great thing, is that research shows that virtual communities can raise you up and lift you up almost as well as meeting in person. Nothing beats meeting in person, but it can do it pretty well. And so that's why it's so important to be around like-minded individuals and to take advantage of the opportunities for connection and for the trainings and everything that is available. Because, man, if you go to what we call, I use this phrase all the time, lonely entrepreneur island, and you're not connected with a tribe, you get pulled down by everybody around you.
Yeah. I mean, that you spoke about that in the book too. Like there were so many parts that just resonated with me in the book where I was just like, oh my God, I went through all of that. There were points in the book where I liked you and I didn't like you, because you were making me think too much. Like, I was going taking it. And I mean that as a compliment too. Like, it was just, you were making me get back into myself and my head and in my soul. And I was like, I've been through all of it. And it was like, it can be very isolating and very daunting, and it can be very dark, you know, and it was all of those things for me. But also you can find light and resilience and, you know, all the good stuff too. But it's like, you will go through the grit and you will experience all the turmoil that comes along with walking that path, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Man, being around the tribe, it's just changed my life in so many ways.
Yeah. You know, something that is funny, I've dropped so many F-bombs on this podcast. One challenge I have never done is no swearing. You don't swear, do you?
I don't. Now here's the thing. Does that not swearing serves me.
I love it.
It serves my mind. And so I don't mind people swearing around me. Like, I'm not offended by it. I used to swear like a sailor. And then one day, it's about 15 years ago, I just thought, you know, I go around telling people what to do. And I know when I swear, I don't feel great about it. And I never swear in front of my mother. And I never swear when I'm on stage. I already never did. So it's clearly I could control what came out of my mouth. And so I thought, you know what, I'm just going to quit. And you know, unless I see a giant bug, which I do from time to time, especially when we lived in Mexico.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
I might swear once in a while, but I don't swear in public. I don't swear on stage. I don't swear in business. I don't swear in my videos. I don't swear in the podcast. I don't swear, you know, in the kitchen of the house, you know, and especially around my kids. And so I just, you know, I'm going to do that. Now, do I think somebody is a bad person if they swear? No, absolutely not. Do you get a little bit more of a laugh? I'm not going to lie. You know, Bedros drops an F-bomb once in a while. He gets a lot of laughs, but I don't think it's necessary. And I think that it's a fun challenge for me. And, you know, to be funny without swearing, there are professional comedians that still do it in this day and age. So it's not like, oh, I can't be funny if I don't swear. Yeah, you can. You just have to work a little bit harder, but you still can do it. So anyways, I took on that challenge. Whether you do or you don't, if it doesn't serve you, and something else serves you, you should choose that other challenge. You know, it's the level 10. But if it's like inhibiting some part of your life, you know, like you're in business deals and you swear and like you lose business deals, then yeah, you should probably work on it.
Sure. I get that. Of course. I mean, I don't swear at church. I wasn't raised by parents that swear. You would never know like that my parents raised me. They don't swear. We grew up in the church. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like I did not get my mouth from my parents. So like I would hate to think that.
That's the power of tribe, because then the tribe that you spent around and the environment in which you were superseded the influence that you had at home.
Yeah.
And that's everything today. You know, like when a good kid from a good family gets into bad trouble because they get involved in a gang, it's the, you know, or just a bunch of bad kids. It's the influence of the tribe and the environment, which it's so powerful. And where's the recognition and reward coming from and the dopamine hits? I mean, all those things can be either used for you or against you. And used for or against your kids. And it's something very important to consider. But most people go, you know, don't think about it. But if you want to be successful, you got to.
Absolutely. I know I got a lot of my mouth from working in the mental health field. I started out working with a group of schizophrenic men when I was 18 years old. And, you know, my journey in the mental health field working with those men, they would just pace and self-talk. It was swearing all day long. And everybody had intermittent explosive disorder. So we were dealing with a lot of violent outbursts and just trying to keep folks safe. And so there was just a lot of cursing throughout my entire, in the early years of my career and just so on. And so, sometimes my mouth can get away from me. And then, you know, getting around Bedros and his network, it's
sure.
contagious.
And you know, again, it's the energy of the room. Now, if you were in a group, let's say you went and did a presentation for a group of women, you probably wouldn't swear. You might get energized and, you know, they might be high energy. And then you put yourself in, do the same presentation in a group of guys who, you know, have some tattoos and do some jujitsu and, you know, swear themselves. And obviously you're going to swear more. So it is totally voluntary based on the environment in which we are in. But here's the thing. If you did that presentation in front of the guys who like swearing, but you didn't swear, no one would notice. That's the interesting thing. Because people only know that I don't swear because I tell people that in my books and on my podcasts. But if I went and I spent 7 days on a, you know, on a hunting expedition or something with guys who were swearing all the time and I didn't swear, I guarantee no one would say anything at the end of the 7 days. It's so interesting. It's just one thing that fascinates me about human nature, because, you know, most people worry so much about themselves. And they think that other people are thinking about them when they're not.
Yeah. Well, I love, my favorite people don't swear. Like I love when I get, because a lot of people in my network, everyone swears. And I think it makes a person that doesn't curse is just more rare. I don't know. I just find it fascinating. And I always enjoy that about someone I make a connection with that doesn't swear. Go. Because they just seem like a rare breed, you know, and I like that. It sets you apart. I think it's great.
Yeah.
And it's also kind of inspired me too, because now, like, that was one that has never occurred to me to do. It never occurred to me to do a challenge.
Right.
Like
because I mean, when you and I grew up, you know, there was no swearing on TV. And then, you know, it kind of got to like this gray area where, is that really a swear word? Is it? Is it not? And now it's, you know, it's almost impossible to go anywhere without swearing in everything. And, you know, it's like, it's kind of refreshing when there isn't any.
It is. It's pretty classy. I dig it. And so now, Craig, when does the book actually launch?
Well, I've got the audiobook done. The manuscript is in the hands of my publisher, and we're hoping to get it in the hands of people in April of 2025. So pretty soon, I guess, is the shorter answer of that. And right now, people can be alerted as to when it's on Amazon by going to darksideofdiscipline.com. It's going to be on Amazon. We're going to be selling it through our website. It's going to be ebook, audiobook.
Now, are you going to do the audio for Audible?
I've done it. Yeah, I did it on Friday.
Awesome.
I did it on Valentine's
Day. I'm going to definitely download that, and I'll buy a hot stack of that book, and I'll be sure to gift it out, because I love to gift out a good book, and this one hit me. And I'll definitely read it a few times, because, you know, I'm just one of those people that need to read something that I enjoy two or three times just because there's hidden gems in there that you miss the first time over.
I love that.
For sure. I love that. And I actually had my t-shirt girl print up a shirt that said Dark Side of Discipline. It just didn't make it here in time for this podcast, so I had to wear this one.
Oh, man. Well, we'll just say that the dark side was in black, so you can't see it on that one.
I like that. But yeah, I'm so happy that to hear that you're putting it on Audible too, because that was one of the biggest motivational factors during the course of me starting on my business, was kind of disconnecting from people and tuning into audiobooks. I would go on an 8-mile walk, tune in on an audiobook, and it was gold.
Yeah. Well, we studied the stats, and twice as many people buy the audiobook as any other type of book.
Yeah.
Because it's so easy, right?
Yeah.
You can be doing the dishes, you can be working out, and you know, you don't have to have it in your hands.
And yes.
People that do the audiobooks tend to listen to them repeatedly, because, you know, we have some clients who are like, yeah, I went through Perfect Week Formula 4 times on audiobook while training for a marathon. Well, great, man. And,
yes. I'm one of the guys that I got to have the hard copy and the highlighter, and I got random notes for your book all over the place. And then I got screenshots.
Oh, man. So if you have stuff, if you have questions like, hey, can you expand on this? By all means, shoot it over, because that's how I get ideas for content and, you know, the next round of books and stuff like that.
Awesome. Craig, what are your handles? Where can the audience find you?
So on Instagram, Real Craig Ballantyne. That's the best place to find me.
Perfect. Yeah. It's been such a pleasure connecting with you today.
Likewise.
I really dig this book. I'm definitely going to buy a stack when they come out and gift those out to some good folks that I know will benefit from it. And I really appreciate you sending the book over and taking the time to come out in the inner circle.
Awesome, man.
Thanks. All right, Craig. Thanks so much. That's a wrap, guys.